Hey guys, this is Mark Potter, publisher of Canvas Magazine, and this is Brushstrokes. Today's episode is sponsored by Conduit Incorporated, channeling content and connections. Conduit specializes in custom content and allows you to get closer to your community. Go to www.conduit-inc.com. Guys, today's episode is a conversation with a very good friend of mine, Dean Petrolakis. Dean is the vice president at a company called Ryder Dickerson in Chicago, Illinois. They recently merged with two other companies and have become Fuse. And they have great ambitions of becoming a marketing service provider. I'm very, very proud to have Dean as my guest today. And Dean is someone I have a lot of respect for. He is probably the best listener that I have come across. Now listen, that's a big deal because I'm a talker. And so we work really, really well together. I do a lot of talking, he does a lot of listening. His only real flaw is that he's a Washington Capitals fan. And as many of you know, I'm a diehard Pittsburgh Penguins fan. So I've gotten the best of him in recent years. But he is a very, very thoughtful man, and he has certain aspirations for turning this company of his into a marketing service provider, and I think they're going to do it. He's very, very thoughtful about the marketplace in general, and he's going to provide us with some insight along with a little history into his life. I believe that Brushstrokes should be a chance for us to get to know people in this industry, and that's what we all want. We want a little bit of the human interest story, and that brings us closer and then allows the insight to take place. So without further ado, here is a excerpt of my conversation with my good friend and buddy, Dean Petrolakis. How's it going? How's the new dealio going?
So far, I mean, it's good. It's crazy. I mean, there's a lot to be done, but I mean, there's a lot of positive energy and a lot of things have to get done, though, man. The first priority is getting us out of our building and into the main building that we're all going to be in by the end of the year, because our lease is up on this building at the end of the year. So that's like priority number one. And so the build out, you know, has to be done, and all the remodeling, the gutting, and then it's going to be really, really a slick building in terms of the interiors. It's going to be a place that you actually be proud to work. So,
yeah, that's cool.
But it's a lot. It's a lot to get us in there. So, there's a bunch of stuff going on around that. You know, we got all kinds of stuff, you know, in terms of the marketing side of it. And then, there's so many different task teams. There's a culture team, all this stuff. So it's all good. It's energizing. And, like I said, I'm just, I'm enjoying the opportunity to collaborate with some new people and some smart people. Jason's a really sharp guy. And then I just got off a call right before I'm talking to you with the higher ed specialist over there at Kelmscott, and just going to be able to do some really, really good things in the higher ed space. It's going to be really exciting.
So, how does that work? How does that work? So they have a higher ed specialist. Does that person sit over that segment or are they a resource for the segment? Like if anybody's got higher ed customers that they come on board, or are you or are they in charge of it? What's the deal?
Yeah, she's, I guess you could say she's kind of like this, if you had to title it, if it was like a sub business in the business, she'd be like the president of the higher ed business. She has an enrollment management background, so she comes from the industry. She used to run enrollment management for a school, and she's got that background. So she's really, really strong on the enrollment communication side strategy for really helping schools with their enrollment funnel and all the stuff that goes with that. So any higher ed opportunity, she gets her hands on. And she's really, so for instance, the way I'm working with her is creating the opportunities. I'm bringing the opportunities. We go in, we meet with the client, and then she's putting together the strategy briefs and all that. And then we review it, and then we present it to the client, and then she executes on it with our team. And it frees me up to just be more focused on, the business development side of it. And, you know, we got a lot of ideas we have to talk about, obviously, with content around that. And she's really excited with the idea of print form and how to do segmented content for the higher ed space. I talked to her and Scott Boris, you know, our new president, and got some excitement around that idea of how to create higher level content for the higher ed enrollment marketing professional. I told them about your philosophy with content and how I think it's the right approach. And you know, Kathleen's very excited about that. I said, you know, it's not your typical white papers, although that's a part of our marketing strategy, but the bigger content play is, you know, developing content that really speaks to that segment and connects with them in a way that, you know, makes them feel like we're one of them.
Yeah. So yeah, I met a guy. I was talking to a guy last night, actually. And Jason's coming to my gig, right, in October?
Wait. Jason's coming, yeah. Jason is coming.
So I met with one of the speakers for Think MSP and last night, a guy named Mark Montini. And it's interesting because, you know, as you talk about white papers and you talk about content, the content changes down the funnel, you know? And I don't think people get that. I think people don't really understand that at the top of that funnel, it's just like a conversation. It's like, you know, hey, you like the Bears? Yeah, you know, and you start to get to know one another. And as you go down and the further down of the relationship, the more granular and more relevant the content to the specific needs of an individual, you know, and I think, you know, we're all trying to promote product. In fact, I've talked to some large organizations lately about that, you know, in a world that doesn't want to see salespeople, right, you've got to do the content that gets you down to the point within the funnel that the salesperson can take over. And Montini and I were talking and he was saying exactly the same thing. And I said, you know, it's funny. I do a magazine for salespeople and I'm all pro sales. To say that I'm taking the top of the funnel away from them, that's not anti-sales. In fact, that's pro what sales should be in this day and age. It really should be an extension of the brand, further, you know, expanding the breadth of the brand. You know, I think that's the emerging deal. So when you talk about white papers, you're right. I think at the top, you got to do some of that human interest stuff. But as you go down, yeah, white papers, I suppose, you know, that type of content is more applicable when somebody says, hey, I want that.
Right.
So right. What's the content that you use to get them to the point where they say, I want that, you know, it's that whole funnel thing. So that's cool. And it's exciting. Hopefully there's a big view of the whole thing are you officially Fuse? Are your cards,
yeah,
do your cards,
I mean,
say Fuse?
Yeah, we're legally Fuse. I mean, my paychecks say Fuse. We are a legal standing company by the name of Fuse. Whether that's the name we go to the marketplace with in terms of our actual company name and the sub-brand and how that works, that all remains to be seen. But that's, I mean, technically we are. We're one company. Everyone's getting paid by Fuse. But we have work to do to figure out how this company is going to be positioned and how we're going to go to market with it. So that's all part of this discovery process. And we're just in the early stages of that. But yeah, and there's a lot of excitement. Our clients love it. I mean, we just hired a friend of mine who, I don't know if I told you last time we talked, but she comes from the large format world because that's one of the big new services we have now. It's the whole grand format, you know, so flatbed, roll-to-roll, that whole arena with trade show graphics and stuff. So she comes from that world. She's been in that world for 15 years. And I was brokering a bunch of work to her, and she was fed up where she was, and we hired her, and so she's really going to be our key person in that area to really help grow that particular, you know, I'm not going to call it a vertical. It's not a vertical. It's more of a product offering, but there's such a great way to add that in is already when you're already with a client, you know, all my higher ed clients, all the time. I mean, I've already had multiple opportunities with her for joint meetings and talking about whether it's permanent or temporary signage. So, that was a real big hire for us as well. So, a lot of opportunities there, like I said, in the higher ed space. So it's just, I'm right now just right, my head is just down, and I'm just strictly in like biz dev mode right now. I'm just trying to be in front of as many people as possible and create the opportunities and spread the word. And then, because it's exciting. People are excited about it because it's a growth move. So it's a move of strength, and people like that. You know, I believe people want to work with people who are good at what they do and have a positive vibe. And, you know, it's not enough good stories like that. Like, you know, like too many printers going out of business and cutting prices and just hanging on. So it's a good thing.
That's for sure.
So
I know.
Yeah.
How did you, you know, I never asked you how you, I can't believe this, all the time we've known each other. I don't think I've ever asked you how you got into this racket.
My history of how I got into the print business?
Yeah.
Everyone has their story. Funny, I just told this story yesterday, actually.
We can still tell me, we can talk about your endeavors to try to get out of it, but they just keep pulling me back in. But no, seriously, I don't think you ever, I don't really know how you did it. I knew you know, you came from Washington and was a dirty Cubs fan, but.
Yes, Washington, my roots. Let's go way back to when I was born. So it's a funny story. So my first job out of college, I worked for a college here that's actually my longest standing client. So Dominican University, small little liberal arts school. I was hired right out of college. It's an interesting story too. I'll say after that, if you want to, you know, wherever we go with this, I can say actually how I got that job. It's kind of an interesting story. But when I worked at the college, I was hired as an editorial assistant. I was 1993. I was making 18 grand a year. And I was clean living, baby.
Yeah, baby.
So I was the editorial assistant. So I was hired. My major in college was communication with a minor in business and English. So I was hired really for twofold, to be the editorial assistant, which meant I would do some copywriting, write for the magazine. I was a quasi sports information director. But I was also hired because I was going to be groomed to be the print production manager. My boss was going on maternity leave, and she was the only one that did it. So I was trained in print production, started going on press checks, learned printing, you know, that was my introduction to printing, really. Each year that I worked there, 4 years, 93 to 97, that became a bigger and bigger part of my job, to the point where by the last year, I was spending probably 70% of my time doing print production for all kinds of clients on campus, you know, admissions, development, student services, athletics. So that's what I was doing. I was managing print production schedules, going on press checks, all that stuff. So I left there, got another job. That was a brief stint in the corporate world. That didn't work out. And then I'm sitting there without a job because there was a big merger. So I lost my job. It's the summer of 97. And a printer that I had used when I was at Dominican, he actually, 2 years prior, probably 95, had told me, if you ever get sick of what you're doing, I'd love to have you come work for me in sales. He goes, you got a great personality. I think you'd be really good in sales. He goes, I could teach you more of the technical side of printing, more than you already know, and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, I called him, not about a sales job, but saying, hey, do you know anyone looking for print production people? You know, I'm out of work. And he's like, I'll check around. But he goes, remember my offer from a few years ago? He's like, it still stands. I'm like, oh, all right. Well, I got nothing to lose. Let's talk. So had a couple of lunches. He ended up, you know, paying me a salary that would cover my basic living expenses, and then structured a deal where, you know, I could make commission above that once I hit a certain threshold. And he said, go at it. He said, I'll give you a year. Let's see what you can do. And I did that with him for 4 years and built up in 4 years, I built up about $500,000 worth of business. So, you know, it's around, I think around $500,000 worth of business from nothing. And Ryder found me through a headhunter. And I knew the name Ryder Dickerson, because they, you know, it was a very prestigious name in our industry here. And I said, what the hell? I'm intrigued by this. So I went and met with them and got hired. And that was actually funny, ironically, that we're doing this this podcast today. That was actually August 16th that I started in 2001. So almost exactly 15 years ago that I've been started at Ryder.
Wow.
So cool. That's how I got in. So I've been at Ryder. Been at Ryder ever since.
What is the compensation model the same? I mean, has that ever changed in terms of? I mean, you know, not speaking to numbers, but has that ever changed in terms of the how it's done?
For me personally,
well,
you're
anybody.
Saying like I, no, I don't think I think I, it's pretty much the model in our business, which has I think has run its course, is you know you go out there, you hunt it, you kill it, you eat it, and that's how you get paid. So it's pretty much commission against a draw. You know, it's been I've been paid that way for 20 years. What is that? I've been doing this since 97, so 19 years.
Yeah. I wonder if it, I mean, I wonder how many people are doing it differently, like salary plus bonus or, you know, just, a, I, you know, I guess because it goes back, you know, you and I are kindred spirits and we talk about, you know, different authors and obviously, I'm been stalking Daniel Pink for years, and he won't take any of my calls, Dean. I don't understand. But you know his stuff when he talks about that. And again, it's one thing to say, look, you know, guys write books, whoever writes a book, an author, and they say, here's philosophically what we're doing. Or what I believe, and you know, maybe that's great, but they're not living in the real world. You know, the reason I liked Pink is that he's a journalist and he gets empirical data. And, you know, when he did in that book Drive, when he talked about the candle problem, do you remember that?
Yeah.
And he talked about how, you know, when you incent something that demands critical thinking, it actually doesn't work, right? And
right.
You know, but when you incent something that is a bit more remedial, for lack of a better terminology, you know, I'm moving the rock from here over to there and how many rocks I can move, you know, I'll get paid more money, you know. And so his data says where there's critical thinking, you know, you got to take the pressure off. So while he simultaneously says, you know, you can't incent, you can't, you know, commissions don't work when there's critical thinking involved, he's simultaneously saying, well, yeah, but I got to take the pressure off, meaning, you know, here's a big old salary, so you don't have to worry about paying the bills, and, you know, but now let's get to the critical thinking. I know that you probably see that. Do you agree with it? And is there ever a chance that, you know, this industry kind of gets to that point?
I would hope so, because I definitely believe that's the way to go. And we're going to be talking about that. That's one of the good things about our merger, is that, you know, a lot of things are up for discussion in terms of team selling and how that works and what the compensation model looks like. You know, we've talked about that kind of at a high level so far, nothing in any details. But me personally, you know, I've been able to be very successful, and I'm Bill and I talk about this. It's like, you know, if you take a sales rep and you give them a salary, do they get lazy? And it's, I guess it depends on the sales rep and it depends on the kind of business they have. Like for me, with the type of work that I do, first of all, it's inherent in me, and it's part of my just makeup that I'm naturally competitive and I'm naturally curious and I'm always trying to do better and I always feel like I can do better. So I'm never standing still. I always feel like I could do better. So if you paid me a salary, yeah, the pressure would be off, you know, in terms of I don't have to worry about the monthly nut and all that stuff that comes with that out of a commission or even a small draw. But I'm still going to go out there and I'm going to be the same way if I was doing that versus a commission, because I'm hungry. Maybe someone else isn't. So that's up to the organization to figure that out and come up with the compensation model that works. But for me, yes, because I love what Pink said about that. Critical thinking, if you take off the stress of, and the in the back of your mind, the idea that I really need to close this deal because I really got to make this commission, I really want to pay for that vacation, whatever it is, whatever goes in the back of people's minds. It just frees up your mind to be so much more creative, and you start to think more about the customer's needs. Again, I tend to do that regardless. I'm not going to lie. I mean, the pressure of commissions is always there, but I just have always thought differently about, you know, just what's doing right for the customer. But I think in general, Mark, our industry, when you're paid the way when the majority of people are, it's like they're just hunting that next deal.
Yeah.
And that creative thinking kind of goes out the window for the ones that are able to do it. I mean, there's obviously, as you know, there's plenty of people that may not be able to do that kind of creative type of selling. But for the ones that are, I think the model that you're talking about, and Pink refers to, is much more relevant.
But, you know, I think it's fascinating. Because you're right, right? What I look at is if years ago, I met with someone, might have been Kodak or something. It was years ago, and the guy drew some concentric circles, and he drew these different markets, right? And he said the trend over the next several years is that these markets are going to collide, and there's going to be a lot of crossover. And so if you think about what's happening with print and, you know, wide format and packaging and ad specialty and designs, it's everything that I preach. You know, we preach this whole marketing services provider concept, and it's because what we're saying is, hey, there's not enough print to sell. Go pull some business from the design community and some from the ad specialty community. And so, you know, hey, if they trust you, you can sell it all. But, you know, which I think that's true. I think a lot of those markets have collided. I think in the roles internal to these organizations, just, you know, and specifically into the B2B space, sales and marketing have always been at odds. And I believe that now the responsibility for things like critical thinking and problem identification, you know, account-based marketing, meaning how do I get a relationship with multiple people on an account, that all cannot sit squarely on the shoulders of a salesperson who is being, you know, being incented to simply put, you know, ink on the paper and food on the table. And I think that's the, so what's funny is where there was never really a marketing leg to this industry, you have just all these salespeople, and they might have even been at odds. Certainly in the big organizations, marketing and sales are at odds, right? Marketing, you know, tries to find a lead, what they call a lead, and they throw it over to the salespeople, and they tell their boss, they say, hey, boss, I got the lead. Now it's the salesperson's job to make a call. And then the salesperson calls the lead, and the lead goes, I didn't want you guys to call me. I don't want to be solicited. And they go, oh, the leads stink, and they're at odds. I think that they're colliding. And I think that when we talked about earlier about the funnel, that, you know, there's got to be work done in the funnel. So that's a major, major recipe change. And so I think it's not illogical. I think that this industry in general can get it. But frankly, I don't think people are embracing this new recipe. I'll tell you this one last thing. And I was in New York last week, and I was talking to an executive, and one guy was talking about finding good salespeople, and he was going on and on about it, and that, oh, he was so proud that he'd hired a young person, and he's really, you know, he's grooming him and he's bringing him along, and, you know, there wasn't really much success yet, but this is how you do it. And so the executive was like, yes, you know, that sounds interesting. And yeah, where do we find these good salespeople? And I said, you know, we're asking the wrong question. Because, I mean, you know, I think it's all about what's the real recipe. There's got to be a different recipe for engaging the market before you put humans involved. You know, the B2B space says 57% of the buying process is done before before human interaction takes place. So you, they find you. So you and I have always agreed on that. And the question is, if that sounds so good and so compelling, why can't this industry get there? Why don't we embrace that?
The people, by and large, at least in my experiences, I've seen the people, by and large, that are running the companies don't share that same mindset. It's still a too much of a manufacturing-based industry, and you know, feeding the iron on the press, and marketing is sending out, you know, email newsletters, and a lot of times it's a resource issue. Mm. You know, a lot of times, you and I have had this discussion before, I think a lot of printers, us included, up until this merger, you know, when you're a small, mid-sized company and you're lean, you're running lean, you're limited, lean on resources, staff, and you're looking at where you're going to spend your money, you know, it's the whole idea of, you know, where am I going to spend my money? Am I going to spend it on this? Am I going to spend it on that? Am I going to spend it on a quote-unquote marketing campaign or a content creation type of campaign that speaks to everything you just said, where I'm not sure I'm going to see anything out of that because I don't trust the salespeople at my organization. 90% of them won't utilize that the way they should. So you get some of that short-sightedness. You know, so it's just an industry that's, you know, it needs a whole flip in terms of the way it thinks. You know, everyone, you got to think with a marketing mindset first, especially with today, the way consumers are buying. Why, and this is what I say, why would anyone in a role, this is the thing, I just told this to someone, in my, I can't remember who I was saying this to, might have been a Lenny or Megan. I said, think about this. I said, as consumers, the way we all shop today, we shop by asking our friends on Facebook, we go to Yelp, we do our research online, right? We go to the same person over and over. Like if you lease a car, if you like that person, you go back over when your lease is over and you go to the same person because you trust them. We keep our circles tight, right? So why would anyone buy differently when that same consumer is in a mindset now that they're representing a company and they're buying? It's the same mindset. Mm-hmm. It's just in a B2B mindset now. I'm going to buy the same way. I'm going to use trusted resources. I'm going to research. And if you get my attention, if you've been in front of my face with relevant content and you've established yourself as someone that gets me and gets my space, whatever that space is, if it's the general marketing space or if it's an industry, then I'm going to welcome you in and I'm going to then bring you in. And as you said, then I can start, you know, dripping on you with white papers and then we get the meetings and that stuff. But why would it be any differently? Why should we think that cold calling is going to work today when none of us at home even take phone calls because we have caller ID? So who's going to take a phone call when they're at their desk at work?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just it's amazing to me that people still think cold calling is effective. I still read blogs where people say it actually works. And it's like, yeah, it might work one in every 500 calls. You get lucky, but I mean, people aren't even answering their phone anymore. Everyone's got caller ID. It's the same with email, too. Same thing with email. I mean, emails, too. You get lucky if you get responses to just cold emailing.
Some people don't really answer texts. I get you know, clients that I text and they don't answer. And you're going, I know you saw it.
Of course you know they did. Everyone gets that notification, so...
That's a perfect way. It is a world where you know that they don't want to talk to you. You're like, you know, oh geez, we're really not on the priority list right now.
Right. I mean, I think about just the fact that even myself, I find myself laughing because I think it was Gary Vee in one of his keynotes. He asked the audience. I saw this on YouTube. He said, "Raise your hand if you get annoyed when someone calls you out of the blue." And I laughed. I laughed. I'm like, oh my God, that's me. I'm like, I don't mind being. I'm on the phone all day. I mean, you and I talk. I talk with clients. I mean, I talk a lot still. But when someone calls me and didn't, you know, text me first to say, hey, do you have a few minutes or schedule the call? it's just, it just, I don't like it. I like to, you know, because I need to know what the context of this phone call is going to be. Forget, I mean, my wife, that's different. You know, that's, I take her and the kids out of it. I'm talking about just like in general.
Oh,
and
yeah. It's just, that was a shameless plug because you know she'll listen to this and, way to cover it. Way to cover.
Yeah, I had to cover that there. So Maria, I did my job there. So no, but it's true. So why would I think then someone would want to take my unsolicited phone call and then hear why they should have a meeting with me unless I've established a trust with them already, or if I was referred to them and they were expecting my call, that's a different story. But it's just amazing to me that we still think in 2016 that people are sitting by their phones waiting for our phone call.
This guy last night, Dean, he says to me, so I had an early dinner with this guy and Mark Montini, and he we're basically riffing, you know, that could have been a podcast. We were going on and on and on. And we're both writing down quotes from each other. It was hysterical. And so, but he did say one thing that I thought was really interesting because he's done a lot of work on how people are buying. He said, he says, both millennials and Gen Xers are working harder than ever before to stay anonymous. Which is really, so that's really interesting. I called it cocooning, you know, but it's gone to the other side. There's so much connection, so much connectivity that you get to TiVo your way through life. I get to choose the interactions that I want. I mean, you know. Like you're an interaction that I want, and you know we inspire one another and make each other laugh and you know that's but you know that's the product of years, but it's really fascinating however, having said that, you know, going back to the people in our industry that say, you know, that's all great and it sounds really wonderful, I love to listen to that on a podcast, but I'm back in the real world and I need somebody to sell some, you know what. And so, and if it still works on some level, maybe it doesn't, you know, stats show it isn't working quite as well, right? Because print in general is down and margins, I'm assuming, are down. You know, we just did a survey last week in Canvas and more people responded. This is the first time this has happened. That they have digital printing capabilities than offset printing capabilities. It's always offsets, always been the number one thing in terms of capabilities from our readership, but the number one thing is now digital printing, and offset is starting to fade. Just a little side note. But I do. I'm sorry?
That's going to continue. I would say if you did that to the survey again next, that's going to continue to trend that way, obviously. That's just the way it's going to go.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm perplexed by it. Especially when you know, it's like Don Quixote in some ways. I sometimes feel like I'm fighting the windmill, you know? And don't get me wrong, it's not just the, you know, the printers. I mean, I love the people that print, you know? You know, I always tell people I don't support print. I support those that print. And I think that's a, you know, bigger deal. But it's not just, you know, looking at the print, you know, the suppliers to our industry, you know, have the same kind of issues. And, you know, they're manufacturers and they've been using kind of the industrial age mindset. And collectively, things just have to change. I think that, you know, jobs report I read, I don't know. I wrote about it. It said that 65% of the jobs when my kids come of age, 65% of the jobs don't even exist.
Yeah.
They'll have. And so, but then over the course of the next 5 years, one of the emerging roles was sales specialists. So I still think that they need really, really, I think in fact, it actually, it sounds like we're saying, hey, you know, we don't need the salespeople at the top of the funnel and we can't pay commission and it's harder and harder to do the cold call and the old fashioned sales. But I think what we're saying is no, we need, the sales rep on steroids. We need the new version, the sophisticated cat, right?
I agree, yeah. I 100% agree.
How'd you...
I think more than ever.
Yeah. So did you always want to be in sales?
No. No, it's funny. I actually, my dad wanted me not to go into sales. My dad's a lifelong sales guy. He you know, he owned some bookstores back in the day, back in D.C., and was in publishing. But, you know, he pretty much, you know, outside of that, has been in sales his whole life and in different forms. And, you know, so since 85, he's been working for the same company. He's semi-retired now. But and he told me, God, this is before I ever got into sales. Because I think it was, this is going back to, I want to say, like mid-90s. So it was before I got into sales. And we were just talking, shooting the breeze. It was at his house. We were having a beer or something. And I said, you know, I said, maybe one day I'll give sales a crack. You know, it's kind of, you get to kind of write your own course. And he's like, and he's looked at me. He's like, don't do it unless you're prepared to work really, really hard. He's like, it takes a lot of work. He goes, you know, it's not what it appears to be from the outside, you know. And I remember that conversation because then when I got into sales, my dad, you know, he knew that I had it in me to do it, but he wanted me to understand that it was not just all fun and games and whining and dining people and orders will just fly in. He goes, you got to work hard. And I remember him telling me, you know, never have an account own you. Never just have one whale account that owns you. You got to keep all, don't put all your eggs in one basket. So he gave me some good advice back then when I got into it. But no, I honestly, Mark, I always thought I was going to be in sports. I always thought I was going to be a sports journalist. Or, I mean, initially, that's what I wanted to be. When I was in college and I was, you know, looking at journalism and communications, I was looking at getting into sports journalism, you know, sports information director, journalism, that kind of, because sports has always been such a central kind of key thing in my life. So, no, it wasn't like I saw myself being in sales. But now that I'm in it and have been in it, it's been the perfect fit for me because of my personality and the fact that I do work really hard and smart and I can engage with all different types of people and I listen. You know, there's certain... It's funny, I think the same... No, the book that... Pink's book, After Drive.
You know, to Sell as Human.
To Sell as Human, where he talks about... and I found this because he spoke about this when I saw him speak here in Chicago on his little book tour, and he talked about that they discovered through their research that actually extroverts don't make the best salespeople. It's the ambiverts. And the fact that it's the person who has the best of both worlds, who's introverted and extroverted, but isn't necessarily that outgoing, work-the-room kind of person. It's the person who actually can listen and but also can engage. And that's who I am, honestly. I'm not... You don't ever see me at a networking event where I'm just walking around handing out business cards, shaking everyone's hands. I'm kind of, you know, just kind of scoping the scene out, and I'll engage in a few conversations, and, you know, I'm curious about people and make those connections. But, yeah, so I just feel that sales, for me, that now that I'm in it, the best part about it is that I get, my days are different every day, and I work on a lot of different types of projects with clients that are all different, and I get to engage with lots of different people. I've met tons of great people in this industry. I mean, we would have never met if I wasn't in this industry. So it's just I've met a lot of really good people, a lot of smart people, a lot of fun people. And my job gives me that ability to just be out and out. I mean, I'm, you know, not sitting behind a desk all day, and it's just I can use my that energy that I have and to connect with people. And that's the fun part about it to me. It ultimately is earning someone's trust enough that they would do business with you. It's always, to me, is the holy grail of sales, is that right. It's not closing deals. It's not, you know, making your numbers. That's all great. But it's that idea that someone trusted you enough and you earn their trust and that they do business with you over and over and over again is the beauty of sales.
Do you have a process?
You know, I probably would say no, and people would probably say that's stunning to hear that, you know, someone who sells at the level that I do doesn't really have, like, a formal outlined process for how I go about my sales, because I really don't. I've always, I mean, especially today, maybe in the beginning, I had a I had, you know, back when cold calling actually was actually effective, I had a process and I charted things and I did all that. And I, you know, I knew how many calls I need to make, all that stuff. You know, I did all that sales training, but now, my process is all about, you know, with new business is really about the, just establishing those connections and the networking side of things. And then I do have a process, I guess, in the sense that I, you know, I try to connect with everyone. I try to make real connections on LinkedIn, and I try to offer value, and I try to, you know, connect people with our content. You know, I definitely, so I guess I shouldn't say no altogether, because actually, and this ties back to you, the first thing that I always try to do is get people on our mailing list, because I want them getting the print form contact, or, you know, in your case, the connect. I the sooner I can get people getting that, the better. So the initially, after I meet someone, I always ask them if they want to be on the list, and, you know, no one has ever said no. So it's, that's the first part of the process, is starting to get that content in front of them. They start getting our emails, they start getting our magazine, you know, they'll start getting our blog posts, because we push that out through our emails. So at least they start getting that content. And from there, it's all about, I guess the only other thing that I could say would be remotely close to a process is I do have a process for how I like to run my initial first few meetings with a client. If it's not a referral, if it's a referral on a specific need, it's different. But if I'm meeting you for the first time and we've agreed to meet, it's really all about discovery and 80% you talking, me listening, and just learning as much as I can from you about where you're at, where you're going, what you're trying to accomplish, where your struggles have been. So that I'm just trying to figure out where initially I might be able to add some value right off the bat. And then following that up with a clear call to action on what the next step would be, in terms of if there's something that we both agreed upon that could be addressed immediately. If not, then it's, you know, again, making sure you're getting my content. But other than that, I don't have like a chart that I follow in terms of I got this number of calls into this person, that's to me, that going back to our discussion from a few minutes ago, that is the marketing side of things that doesn't happen, that should. I feel that that whole charting and cold calling type of thing, that is what should be part of the lead generation and nurturing process that happens through the content and the white papers and all the other stuff that keeps you relevant until the time that person needs you, or you've discovered a need that they have, that you talked about problem identification. That is something I feel that I do really well, is someone comes to me with an opportunity, and my job is to say, okay, well, there's got to be more to this opportunity than what they came to me with. And that's when they have the big antennas up and you're trying to decide, okay, is this really what they need, or is there a bigger thing that they need that could be the more valuable alternative and solution? And that's been very successful for me in terms of that approach. But that only comes from listening. You gotta be able to listen. You gotta be able to sit and listen and be able to understand before you just want to throw up your solutions over the client and say, this is what we can do, we're great at this, we're great at this. And I've turned away, funny, you know, kind of put a cap on this, on this section here, I've turned away business, meaning I've stalled winning business and short-term wins for myself in terms of income to do the thing that was right for the client long-term. Sure. And that, to me, is always the right way to do things, is, you know, I've done that many times. You know, right. I could have had a surefire sale, and I pushed it off because I knew that the right thing was something else.
Well, it's good old fashioned relationship building. I mean, you know, it's taking interest in someone and showing them that you're worth the time. And, you know, I it's a different age in terms of trying to stay top of mind. And you know, I do a lot of, if I read something that I think is valuable, I might share it with people. And you know, I'm not shy about sending a stupid, silly, you know, or fun gift every once in a while, that just to stay top of mind. And do it that is in a way that is not intrusive, and then eventually you get to that part where, you know, the relationship starts to take a life of its own, and you get to know people. And I do think that's the key, right? I mean, problem identification. Everybody talks about solutions in this industry, you know, and I just think they're a dime a dozen, you know, whether they just are. And in fact, print is the same way. You know, I still get calls from people saying, hey, you know, we've got high quality print at low prices and great customer service. And, you know, oh, Jesus, where do I sign up? I can't believe my lucky stars.
Where have you been?
It's unbelievable.
Where have you been?
And I know. I mean, this is a true story. I had somebody call me, go, and they did it multiple times. They called and somehow got through to me, and they said, I just wanted to check and see if you're still happy with your current supplier. And I said, you know, well, do you read the magazine? Oh, well, I can't say that I have. I said, well, geez, you know, why are you calling me? But I said, it's kind of like, you know, that'd be like, you know, my an old boyfriend of my wife calling, so, you know, I thought I'd give you a shout and see if you're still happy with Mark, you know? Now, whether she answers no or yes or no, that's another completely different podcast. But I, you know, it's that silly. So it's not solutions. It's not, hey, you know, we've got this and push the product. It's, you know, I understand your pain and I understand your angst. But I do think that's it. I do think it is getting to a point where, you know, you can solve problems. That takes time. So you go back to the thing that you originally said is, you know, the leaders of our industry, you know, do they have that mindset? Can they commit to that mindset that says, you know, this is going to take time and, you know, to develop a relationship, but it's so much more fulfilling. It's enriching. And it's sustainable. It's what, you know, over the course of time, you know, the relationship carries the ball, and doing something in the short term to just sell some print is a tough thing. So, well, it sounds like you guys have a lot of work ahead of you. It sounds like it's exciting that you're putting these companies together. I'm certainly happy for you guys. I think that it'll be mostly, I think I'm happy for, because it sounds like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that this is a chance to start to incubate some of these concepts and philosophies. I mean, I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think there's a lot of, hey, just go sell and let's, you know, beat the pavement. I don't think that you can just throw that out and then say, hey, we're going to incubate this new recipe by itself. I think you can do it in concert. And so, like, if you're talking about the higher education segment, so sounds like you guys have some of that going on.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because the idea here is that you hit it right on the head. It's not like you just throw out all that stuff and you're not going to just stop selling and do that. I mean, that's still a big part of it, but you got to have the side hustle going. You know, you got to have while you're doing this, you got to be investing some time and resources and energies towards what about this, and, you know, try it and see if it works. And this is the perfect time to do that with three companies coming together with some real smart people that can put their heads together and come up with these ideas and try them. Like you said, it's the side hustle. You know, don't take your eye off the big prize that got us all here. But you know what? That they say, what got you where you are isn't going to get you to where you want to go. I mean, it's a cliche saying, but it is true. You gotta be constantly looking to try new things and have the stomach to do it. So I think I am excited about it. I really do. I like the ownership team. They all, obviously, I have a long relationship with Bill and have, you know, full trust in him and respect the heck out of him. And but, you know, meeting the other guys now and kind of getting a sense for their vision and where they want to take this company, it's exciting. It's an energizing thing to be a part of.
Yeah, that's cool. So, that's awesome. I appreciate it. This is fun. I'm excited about doing this because, you know, I'm not shy about talking. So, and I.
No, you've never been. That's why I said we always get along great, because I'm not shy about listening. So.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate it, buddy.
All right, Mark. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for everything.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Brushstrokes. I'd like to once again thank my guest, Dean Petrolakis. What a great guy. I really enjoyed the conversation as usual. He is a bright mind, and I really thought that his insight was helpful. I'd also like to thank Conduit Incorporated as the sponsor of this podcast. You can visit them at www.conduit-inc.com. They can help you with all of your custom content needs. As for additional episodes of Brushstrokes, please visit thecanvasmag.com, www.thecanvasmag.com, or subscribe to us on iTunes. Once again, thanks to Dean, thanks to Conduit, and thanks to you. Join us again on another episode of Brushstrokes. Take care.